Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. It's our last new episode of 2023, and I could not be more thrilled that it's with a comedian who I've been trying to get on this podcast from the very beginning, the legend herself, Wanda Sykes. Earlier this year, Wanda released her sixth stand-up special on Netflix called I'm an Entertainer. And now it has been nominated for an Emmy, a Golden Globe, and a Grammy. And those honors are so well-deserved because, as I tell her in this refreshingly candid conversation, I think it just might be her best hour yet. We get into so much during this talk, including how her jokes about trans women serve as a much-needed counterpoint to Dave Chappelle, how she is still processing the trauma of watching Will Smith slap Chris Rock from just a few feet away almost 2 years later, and how she's feeling about her comedy legacy as she prepares to turn 60 next year. Before we get into it, let's listen to a clip from her latest special, in which Wanda talks about losing her virginity to a man when she knew deep down it wasn't for her.
And even then, it took me a long time. Like, I was a virgin until I was a junior in college. Yeah. And even then, I was just like, let me just get this over with. And I found the shortest guy with the littlest hands I could find. Teeny hands. Because I was like, you know, I ain't trying to have a whole meal. I was just looking for toppers, you know. Just do toppers. And he was nice. He was nice. So then I started having sex with guys, you know. But, you know, it never really did anything for me. But they seemed to enjoy it. And I guess that was enough for me because, you know, I'm an entertainer.
Well, Wanda, first of all, congrats on your first Grammy nomination for I'm an Entertainer. That's pretty exciting.
Very exciting, and thank you. Yeah.
What do you think took them so long?
Maybe I just wasn't sexy enough earlier. it's just really cool. You know, it's really cool because when I started, it was always about the comedy albums. That was the thing, right? So now to finally have that out and to get, you know, nominated, it's like, okay, it's like the best.
Well, I have to tell you, I've been a fan of yours for so long. I've wanted to have you on this podcast for so long. And I love all of your specials, but I do think that this one is exceptional. And you just cover so much in it. I was rewatching it this week. I had watched it when it came out originally. And it just, it seems like you really hit on so many things that have dominated the conversation in these past couple of years, especially since the pandemic and everything. One bit that really stood out to me this time and something that I've thought about a lot is how you really crystallize how conservatives are focusing on the wrong issues. And I think kind of summing it up as trying to ban drag queens in books, not assault weapons.
At the library, they even stopped the drag queens story hour. They were reading books to kids and they stopped that. They said, well, a man dressed as a woman is confusing to kids. Well, have you seen Sesame Street? I think if the kids can figure out Snuffleupagus, they can handle RuPaul. Texas. They're banning books in Texas. Banning books. Well, we're protecting the kids. Well, if you really want to protect the kids, ban assault weapons. That's what's killing the kids. Not the books.
So I thought maybe we could just start there and how you kind of arrived at that, way to sum up that issue.
Yeah. I mean, I thing, like my style or taste or whatever is I like to give like a snapshot of what's going on during the time. And also, you know, lean into just the hypocrisy and just the ridiculousness of everything, you know, that's going on. And, you know, it's like they go after these issues that they know it's, you know, hot or cold, you know, and it drums up their fan base. But they really are offering no solutions. There's nothing that they're offering that's going to help anyone. That's going to make anyone's
kind of distraction.
Yeah, all distraction. It's just noise. And I like to try to cut through that.
Yeah. You know, you also, something that goes along with that is the trans issue that you talk about with the ladies' room and all that. You know, I've had a lot of comedians on this show sort of talking about how they have gone about talking about that issue. And it's somehow become a very big issue, both in the country and in the comedy world, you know, with people tackling it from different angles. What made you want to talk about it and talk about it specifically from the angle that you chose?
I guess it's trying to find that line of how much of it can I talk about? And I mean, like, as someone who's, you know, not trans, I'm not trying to go, you know, deep into the psyche and all of a trans person, because I don't have that. But I do know that they have a right to exist and shouldn't be singled out when they're just trying to live their lives, man. That's all. They don't want, who wants to be bothered? I think we all just want to be able to just live our lives and not be bothered. So to bring them up, this whole community, as a political issue, you know, and then just something as ridiculous of a natural human function of going to the bathroom. <Yeah.
laughs> And it seems like it comes down to bathrooms. They really don't want trans women to use the ladies' room. Let me just tell you something. For anybody who's ever been into a ladies' room, there ain't nothing ladylike in there. If you go into a public ladies' room and it's clean, you better play the lottery, because you got lucky. I don't know what the fuck happens to women when we go into that restroom. It's like you can see a woman, she could be in heels and a fucking gown and a tiara. So, as soon as she crosses that threshold of the ladies' room, it's...
I just don't get it. And also, it's... all these people who are, you know, whether it be, you know, politicians or comedians or just crazy people, it's how often are you really going to come in contact with a trans person in your daily life? Are they really in your way? You know,
it's something that they're, these people seem very afraid of for some reason that I don't quite understand. I don't know if you saw, this just happened last night while we're talking. Dave Chappelle visited Capitol Hill and took a selfie with Lauren Boebert. I don't know if you caught that. And another congresswoman. And Lauren Boebert's caption was something like, just three people who believe there are only two genders. And it was a picture of her with Dave. I don't know if he approved that caption, but that was pretty rough to see that union.
Wow. Is what state is she? Oh, she's Texas.
Colorado.
Right?
Colorado.
Oh, Colorado. Yeah. Colorado. So it's not even his state. It's not Ohio, right?
No. Mm. So that was something.
I mean, if I go to Capitol Hill, I don't think I'm going to, you know, I am not seeking out, where's Lauren?
Selfies,
you
know, Let me get in a pic with Lauren.
Yeah. Where's Lauren? Oh, man.
Yeah. I think, you know, whether it was intentional or not, the bit that you have in your special does serve as some sort of counter to, you know, Chappelle's anti-trans jokes, you know, and you said previously that you know, you thought you might say something to him if you ever crossed paths about, you know, what he's had to say on stage. Is that something that's happened? Have you gotten the opportunity to talk to him about it at all?
No, I haven't. And, you know, here's the thing. I love Dave. I've known Dave since, you know, back in the DC days when we started together. So yeah, I would, you know, I just haven't had the opportunity, but. Yeah.
Well, the Grammys could be the time. You're nominated in the same category.
Yeah, I think that would be the perfect place to bring it up.
That seems like a good spot to do it. Maybe on stage. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
But you've in general been pretty critical of comedians who complain about that they're not allowed to say anything anymore and all that kind of stuff. What do you think is at the core of those complaints? I mean, these are people who a lot of like Dave and others that you're friends with. I mean, why do you think that they feel the need to complain about that? Because you obviously don't feel the same way.
It's America. You have the right to say whatever you want to say. So I just think it's false when they say that they can't. No, you can, but there's going to be some people who might not like what you say. So it's if you really believe in what you say and what you want to say, then I say, you know, hey, go for it. But just be prepared to deal with the outcome. Yeah. So I, you know, and to me, it bothers me when comedians say that, because now when you're on stage, I'm sitting as an audience member going, but what do you really think?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like, well, yeah,
there is a strange thing about like comedians who then get in trouble or get backlash for things and say, well, that's not really what I don't really feel that way, but I'm just saying it on stage. But there is this perception for most audience members that when you see a comedian say something on stage, it's because they mean it.
Right. I mean, unless you're doing a character, you know, unless, yeah. But we all know you're doing this character. You're not that same person as you are on stage.
The sort of excuse of like, it's just a joke, don't take me too seriously. It doesn't seem to fly as much given that, you know, comedians are talking about these big issues and giving their opinions. And so, I mean, yeah, how do you think about that for yourself? Like when you are on stage, do you feel like you have to stand behind what you're saying, even if it's a joke?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Let me think about it. Yeah, I would say what I say on stage is pretty much how I feel, you know, except like maybe parenting. I exaggerate in that area, but even if I say it, you know, I'm playing, like I'm not hitting my kids, you know, but I say, you know, I'll say something like, I've said it before, like, I can't hit them. They're white. You can't go around hitting white, you know, my black ass can't be beating white kids, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's not like you actually want to, but no one would think that either. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Another comedian in the same Grammy category is Chris Rock, who his live special that kind of responded to everything with the slap at the very end of it. You know, you were obviously there co-hosting the Oscars that night. What did you think of his response to it all those months later? I mean, he made us wait both till the end of the year and to the end of his special to see what he thought about it.
I you know, I was happy for that guy, you know, and I love that he did it live, because it's like, there's no taking it back, you know?
Yeah, there was even one moment where he flubbed a little bit, and you could see he was something that they would have edited out, but they couldn't.
Right. But
it was interesting.
And it's very. I'm pretty sure it was very cathartic for him too. You know, just holding that, all of that for so long, and just getting it out. I mean, although, you know, he was touring with it, but from what I understand, some of it, it was the first time. Him saying some of that stuff. Yeah.
That's pretty wild to put. Yeah. Have you done that before? Put something in your special that you had never, said on stage before?
Yeah. I've done that several times, especially if the audience is hot and you just feel freer to just, you know, it's always like a tag, or, I'll find another, you know, another beat or something. And I love doing that. Yeah.
I was curious with the, you know, with the Oscars thing. I know it's been a while, but with you, you know, you were there as a co-host. Were there discussions at that moment about, should we go out? Should we say something? Should we go out? Should we, you know, sort of address it in some way? Because, you know, that you could have, if you had wanted to in the way.
Absolutely. You know, we were Regina and I just finished a bit out in the audience. So we were going, and we introduced Chris. And so we, you know, I was trying to run to my trailer. And then when I got to the trailer, like the sound and all, I couldn't really get it. I said, now I want to be in the room. I want to hear this. So I ran back to the.
Once you realized something was happening.
Yeah. And then when I got to the stage, it just happened.
So you were close.
Yeah. And I was like, what? Did he really hit him?
I mean, you must, we all at home kind of, there was a moment for people who thought it was maybe a bit or we didn't know if it was real. But I mean, you as the host must have known, you would have known if there was a bit planned like
that. Not really. Because during the rehearsal, we just did our parts and we didn't watch the whole show. So, I didn't know what was happening, if it was real or not. And then when Chris said, he just smacked the shit out of me, I'm like, oh, damn, that's real. You know, I'm looking around like, well, where's security? You know, like they had security people walking around with us. So I'm like, where's security? Where is any, you know, what's happening?
Did you expect, you know, Will Smith to be dragged out by security or?
Man, are you kidding? It's the Oscars. It's the Oscars. I don't care who I expected. I thought it was going to be some big dudes in some suits and they were going to take him, walk him out. And LAPD was going to be waiting for him on the other side. I mean, but
why do you think that didn't happen?
It's Hollywood. It's Hollywood. But weird. It's just craziness. I don't know. I have no idea what happened, but I do know Chris didn't want to press charges. So I guess it started there also. But I was waiting for the, you know, because the thing is we were going to change into to come out in pajamas. Then we said goodnight. Right. So I stayed in my clothes because I was like waiting for the producer, Will Packer, to say, hey, I need y'all to go back out and blah, blah, blah. But
they didn't want that. Yeah. No. I mean, I think that might have helped the situation
Puffy
in some
did.
Way.
But Puffy did. He was the next.
That doesn't look good now either. Yeah. That's tough. Of all the people to, you know, have an opinion about it, I don't know if he was the right one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could have been maybe diffused by comedy and Chris was kind of stunned. Didn't know. I mean, seemed like he didn't know what to say in the moment. Obviously, we got lots of jokes from him later, much later. But yeah, to have a host come out and sort of address it, I don't know if that would have helped because it was just so tense for the rest of the show, right?
Right. And then poor Questlove, you know.
Yeah, he got kind of,
It's like, yeah, and then he's torn because it's like, damn, you know, I'm about peace and love. But Will's from Philly. I'm from Philly. You know,
yeah, that was very complicated for him. Yeah,
so he's like, I'm just gonna, I'm gonna focus on my project. I'm happy about my project, and it was crazy.
It was crazy. I don't know.
It really messed me up. Yeah. Too.
I think it felt like it really messed up a lot of people. Like it was traumatic for people watching, which was just something we rarely see something that real happen in that kind of setting. I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't expect that Oscars. And then, and you know I got some crap because I was like, and when I went on Ellen, I said I was traumatized, but I literally was, man. It's like,
I don't see why you should take crap for that.
I was at my job and my coworker, somebody smacked the shit out of my coworker. You know, if this was a Waffle House, you know what I'm saying?
The cops were getting called.
Exactly. So yeah, I just like, by the whole thing, like what the hell, and then wild. Knowing that the whole world is watching,
yeah, that's crazy. Well, you and Chris obviously go way back. One of your earliest writing gigs was on the Chris Rock show, and you got to return to the sort of late night TV world earlier this year, guest hosting the Daily Show, which I thought you were fantastic at.
Thank you.
And it kind of gave you a chance to react to the news in real time in a way that you know you can't always do in stand-up. Did you enjoy having a platform like that for the first time in a long time?
I did. I really did. It was a lot of fun. It's a lot of work too, but I enjoyed it. You know, it's a long day. It's a very long day. You get there in the morning and you go over the, you know, they present you with topics and you pick stories that you want to do. I mean, and then you're writing the show. Welcome to the Daily Show. You know, I'm like, I said, wait a minute, we're actually starting from Welcome to the Daily Show. Okay. You know, but they got a great group over there, great, you know, team. And I really did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. And it's so cool to be able to talk about something, you know, in the moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that must be really cathartic in some ways. You had one gift early on, kind of dark, but that the diamond and silk funeral kind of fell in your lap that first day.
Yeah.
I think that was that was kind of a crazy one to talk about.
I mean, it like you said, it just fell into my lap. Really, I mean, all you had to do was just play the clip of Trump bragging about himself and then trashing the deceased. I didn't really know her. I knew.
I know Diamond. I didn't really know Silk. Yeah.
Oh, it was just the best. It was just the best. Like, thank you. Thank you for this. Oh, my God. I mean, it's like Trump showed up to that funeral like, Diamond's dead, but I'm going to bury Silk. Oh, yeah, there's room for two in that casket. On that, to say you know Diamond but don't know Silk is wild, because they're always together. Like, that's like saying I know Bert but I never heard of this Ernie fella. What's his deal?
Have you had any did you have any discussions with them about making it a permanent gig? I know there's just been so much speculation about who is going to get the job eventually. Is that even something that you would want if it was on offer?
I have not had conversations about that. You know, I say no, I don't think I would want to do that. But I say that like right now. You know, I don't know if, who knows? Who knows, you know, down the road if it's, it, you know, especially with kids, it might be nice to be having to stay put in one place and being able to, well, this is my schedule and I know, you know, this is the routine, but then it feels like a job. You know, I'm doing comedy because I don't want a job.
Well, you had your own, you know, talk show for a bit. And that was that.
Right. So, and I know,
you remember
I know
what
how
that was
hard
like.
It is. Yeah. I know how hard it is. And I was foolish enough to do a talk show while I was still doing the New Adventures of Old Christine.
Oh, really?
So I was a series regular.
Yeah, so you're kind of split. Trying to split between the two.
It was the dumbest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, that's tough.
Dumbest thing I've ever done.
Well, by all accounts, Hasan Minhaj kind of had the job before that New Yorker story came out. I was curious if you read that or saw that at all, what you thought about you know, that whole controversy.
I did not read the story. I saw some of his rebuttal that he put out. And I don't know, for me, it's, you know, when you start fact checking comedians, that's to me, that's just strange.
Yeah.
It feels personal. You know, it feels personal, right?
Yeah.
It feels personal. Like, why, wait a minute, why are you fact checking comedians with all of the stuff that's going on in the world? You know, you're a journalist, but you're going to go after a comic. It felt personal to me.
Yeah. I think it had a lot to do with, you know, the Daily Show aspect of it, and sort of like the comedian, sort of like what we were talking about before. It's like comedians have become sort of like news sources as well, or people who, you know, are trusted, you know, that you go to for your news in some ways. And that's what the Daily Show was really about. So maybe that had something to do with it.
Could be. I don't know enough about it, but yeah.
Well, if it's not going to be him and it's not going to be you, who would you want to see in that role on The Daily Show? Is there someone who you're pulling for?
I don't know. Everyone brings their different take to it. I mean, I know Leslie really wants it. I know, you know.
Leslie Jones is fantastic. She's now come back a second time. And I thought she was great.
Yeah. Ronnie's good. I thought Sarah did a great job. I don't, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I think they tried out Leslie Jones and Jordan Klepper together, and I had a feeling that might have been something they were thinking about.
But, you know, I was sad to see Roy Wood. I was always call him the boxer. I always say Roy Jones.
Roy Wood Jr., yeah.
But Roy Wood, I love Roy. I love Roy.
I thought he was all, you know, lined up to get it.
I thought so, too. When I guest hosted and he came on, I was like, should we switch seats? You know, I said that to him.
Coming up, Wanda talks about hitting the road for her Please and Thank You tour this upcoming election year. And later, what is it really like to brutally roast Larry David to his face?
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're enjoying this episode and want to hear more, please make sure you are following The Last Laugh wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing to The Last Laugh, you can listen to our episodes with other comedians whose specials recently scored Grammy or Golden Globe nominations, like Sarah Silverman and Ricky Gervais, along with everything else from our free archive. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Wednesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple and Spotify to let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to Wanda Sykes. So you have a big tour starting in March. Your next hour, is that something that you're already working on now? Or do you got material that you're working out for that tour?
Yep, I was in. I was out in LA. I did like a weekend and a couple weekends, like Oxnard and Ontario, and then a week before last, I was in Phoenix. And that's what I do. I like to go to the clubs. And just work stuff out, see what I have, and I'm in pretty good shape. I'm in pretty good shape. I'm sure, like in February, I'll hit a couple of clubs again, and I'll be ready to go in March. And I'm so excited about this tour. I really am, because I haven't toured in such a long time. You know, it's like I always do like dates here and there. You know, maybe 2 weekends in this month, and then I, you know, quiet for a little bit. So it's been like, man, it's probably been over 10 years since I've actually said boom, 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 you know, just a real legitimate tour.
Yeah. Are there themes or things that you're talking about that you're particularly excited about or sort of new ideas?
Oh, I'm kind of leaning into greed right now. Greed. Yeah.
In what sense?
It's fun. Just how our lives and how we function. Just even simple things as like we're all cashiers now. You know, it's all just self-serve, you know, just check yourself out now. It's and that's greed. That's corporations not wanting to pay people, you don't have to pay those machines benefits and healthcare and all that. So, just a lot of that.
How are you feeling about heading out, you know, across the country in 2024 as the, you know, ahead of the election and sort of the political stuff heating up?
I guess it depends on which way everything falls, right? But right now, you know, I don't know how much of that people want to hear. Honestly, right now, I don't want to talk about it. You know, it's like I'm leaning more to like things that we all can agree on. You know, start there. I'm trying to get back to the basics, and that's why I called it please and thank you. Let's just get back to basic humanity. Respect for each other, you know, just some kindness, and the politics, you know, it's like they're really trying to scare the crap out of us with these polls and everything, right? And I'm like, but just really look at a poll, you know, they're only talking to about like 2,000 people, And these people probably have landlines, right?
Yeah. It's a very specific set of people.
I don't have one friend or know anyone who's actually been polled. Because if you, first of all, if you see somebody calling and it's a number you don't know,
you're not answering it.
It's my parents that they're calling. You know, it's like,
so are you not as worried as
under 80? Yeah.
Are you not as worried as other people about Biden and the fears about him being too old and all that stuff?
No.
All right.
Not
well, that's
at
good.
All.
I don't hear much not hope these days, so I'm happy to hear from you.
Well, I'm here to give you some hope. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, there is one of the things that polls have been talking a lot about is that there's this surge in support for Trump among Black men. Do you think that's real, or does that worry you at all, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Again, I don't know one Black man who is for Trump. I don't know. I don't know
apparently
where
they
find these brothers. You know, I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if they're being paid or what. But I know there's a lot of, you know, I shouldn't even say a lot, but I know there's some animosity. If you go online and it seems like, I mean, towards women, especially Black women, you know, a Black woman could just say the most, you know, mundane thing on a social, and then you just get,
you must have experienced a lot of that.
Just jumping on her. Yeah. Just jumping on her for no reason, you know? And so I know there's a lot of that out there right now.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing I've seen is that part of they're sort of trying to drum up fear that because Joe Biden's so old, that if you vote for him, that's really voting for Kamala Harris, and that plays into that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's wrong with that? I mean, you know, she's qualified. I don't know. It's like I said, again, we're being, you know, fighting over the wrong things.
Yeah. Well, you have that bit in your special about being a Democrat is painful.
So painful.
This is all of the worrying and, you know, sort of, maybe not being as confident as we should be is part of that problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's painful. It's painful to have to, try to stick to the facts and try to, you know, and to have empathy. Boy, it's painful. It's really painful.
Because being a Democrat is painful, y'all. It's painful. It's like getting a wedgie every fucking day. Just gotta take it. Because they make up all kind of shit, but why do we have to be handcuffed to facts and reality? When they living in some alternate universe, just making up shit. Because, you know, politics is just straight up entertainment now, especially on the Republican side. All they doing is entertaining. You know what it's like? It's like the Dems are PBS and the GOP is TLC. Man, I could watch TLC all day. That shit is fun. What would you rather watch? PBS NewsHour or Dr. Pimple Popper?
I hope it's okay to say that you're turning 60 next year.
Yes.
Which is a big milestone. Does those kind of, you know, big birthdays make you think at all about your legacy in the comedy world, or sort of like where you fit in this history of comedy?
Wow. Well, now that you brought it up, I guess I had to start
now
thinking about
to.
It. Damn. Thank you. Thanks for putting that out there.
It's not a bad thing.
I'm just very, I'm very grateful. And I know, you know, it's funny because I know when I started doing stand up, my aspiration was, hey, you know what? I want to be able to travel around the country or whatever and play, you know, theaters and sell them out. That's what I want to do. And with this tour, you know, tickets are on sale and we're adding shows, you know, the numbers are looking great. I'm selling out places and all. And it hit me the other day, like, oh, wow, I finally hit what I really wanted, you know, what I said I wanted to do when I started out. So that feels great. You know, I was like, teared up a little bit because it's, you know, because at first when you start out, you know, you got to get to the city days ahead and you got to go in, you got to do all the radio and you got to, you know, do the press and all that stuff to try to sell tickets. And now my work speaks for itself, or people now, like, they're just going to show up, you know, and that's, I don't take that for granted. And it, you know, but it's taken what, 30 years, over 30 years to get to that place where I said, this is what I, you know, what I want to do. And of course, like the TV shows and all that stuff, to me, that's icing on the cake.
Yeah. Do you think that you got there just with accumulation of all of the work that you've done, or are there certain things that you did or chose to do that you think really, like, helped get you to this place, decisions that you made or anything?
I think I've been consistent, I think, you know, and I work hard at it. And I'm not going to lie, I also think Netflix and the specials and social media and all, I think that helps also growing your audience.
The Netflix effect is big, right?
It is. And you can't deny it, you know?
I know. And you almost kind of, or at first you were a little hesitant to work with them, right?
Or you, a little bit. Yeah. First of all, I'm an HBO girl. I started, you know, Chris Rock show and my first specials and all. That was the thing. Yeah, Curb. It was HBO. So, but I'm enjoying my relationship with Netflix. They're, you know, the Upshaws is doing well for them. So it's a good relationship, and it definitely moves the needle.
Yeah. So now it's time for our segment called The First Laugh. So I'm going to run through some questions about firsts in your life around comedy. Starting all the way back, do you remember the first piece of comedy that made you laugh really hard as a kid? It's not just something that comes to mind.
First piece of comedy, Jackie Mom's Mabley. Seeing her on, I don't know if it was the Ed Sullivan show or maybe Smothers Brothers comedy, but... yeah. Oh my God. She made me laugh so hard. She, you know, just, I guess also because she reminded me of my great grandmother, you know, just the way she dressed and everything. And, you know, just the way she talked. And, it's like she would talk directly to the audience, you know, where other comedians, you know, they would do a bit like they were performing, where she was just talking right directly to the audience, you know.
Do you think that influenced your style?
Probably, yeah. I think so. Definitely with the, I'm not trying to be the glamorous, you know, whatever comedian. Just come on, just give it to me straight, you know.
Yeah.
Which is hard for a lesbian to do, to give it to you straight.
Do you remember the first time that you knew that you were funny, that you could make other people laugh?
Yes, it was. I think I was in maybe the fifth or sixth grade, and there was we were having a party on our street, and our it's a lot of like military, retired military people. My dad's was in the army, and the neighbor across from us, the Keeches, you know, everybody, it was, they were doing a lot of day drinking, adults and all. And Mr. Keech, he was retired, older man. He fell and he hit his head on the curb, and it just blood just started gushing down. Right. So, gushing down. So, all the adults were like, well, geez, we got to take him over on base to the hospital. To, you know, to the military hospital, but they were all, you know, a little tipsy. And so there was one woman who was sober, She was like, I can go. She said, but I don't know, you know, where to go or whatever. And my mom was like, Wanda, go with her and show her how to get to the hospital and get her in and all that. I was like, all right. So we go, we take Mr. Keach, and Mr. Keach is lit. I mean, you know, you could just smell it, yeah. Right? So we get to the hospital and they take him in and they're asking her, you know, questions. She had his ID and gave it to him and all. And then the doctors, he said, is there anything else we should know about Mr. Keach? And I said, well, I wouldn't put him near an open flame. And they all fell out laughing. And I was like, oh, dang, that yeah. felt good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like, all right.
What about the first time that you actually got up on stage and did stand up? Where was it? How did it go? How did it feel? What do you remember about it?
Ooh, it was great. It everything made sense for me. It was a Coors Light super talent showcase or something. It was a talent show in the you know, Maryland, D.C. area. And a radio station was sponsoring it. So I was like, comedy was a category. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna go down here and audition. And I did. And they said, okay, we're going to put you on the show. And, you know, never. First time, like you said. So I do the show and I get a lot of laughs. And Tony Woods, he was also on the show. And Tony won, rightfully so. But the MC, Andy Evans, he's a local DC guy. He's like, who are you and where are you from? What, like, where have you been doing stand up? I was like, this is my first time. He said, okay, we got to get you into clubs. This is crazy that you just come out of nowhere and you're this good. You actually like constructed jokes. This is crazy. But that first time I guess because I was working at NSA at the time, and I don't know if it's because I applied the same, you know, method that you need to do a job to this, you know, in my job, you have to, you know, get your documents together and write whatever. And I just did that. So I knew I was prepared when I went up. I'd never done stand up. So I didn't know it could go awful. You know, I'd never been to comedy club. So I didn't know
you never
that.
Bombed before.
Never bombed before. So why am I afraid of bombing if I never bombed before, right? So just total naivety. And I just get up and I loved it. And people are laughing. I'm like, this is the best. This is what I want to do. It all made sense to me then. This is my purpose. This is what I want to do. And then the next time I go on stage.
Yeah, this is a common story.
Oh, the death. I can still feel it. Dude, it was horrible. Just like people just in the audience just shaking their heads, you know, like,
yeah.
like this isn't even worth booing. I'm just gonna look at you like sadly and just shake my head like, mm-mm, this is not it. It was awful. It was awful. I couldn't sleep for like 3 days. I couldn't eat. I would actually get nauseous, and it was the worst.
What made you get back up after that?
Andy Evans. Yeah, Andy was like, "So how you feel?" I was like, "I'm sick. I'm physically ill." He said, "Well, you know, Thursday is open mic. You got to see you at the club. Yeah. Got to see you at the club." And I did, and all I needed was like two good laughs. I got two good laughs, and
yeah, that's what keeps you going.
The world's right. Yeah.
Do you remember the first joke that you wrote that really worked, that you could, you know, that sort of always got a laugh, was consistent, that you felt really good about?
It was like, you know, I think most comics, when they start doing stand-up, we all become a little Jerry Seinfeld, I think, right? Observational humor. So My joke that always worked was about those, you know, that the auto shade, the cardboard,
your windshield?
Sunglasses, you put them in your windshield, keep your car cool. So I talked about the auto shade and I said, do you know those things have, instructions on them, you know, and it literally says, do not, please remove all, remove auto shade before starting your car. Do not operate your car while the auto shade is in place. And I'm like, who is this for? Who needs, you know, who really needs to be told to take that thing out of your window before you drive it? I was like, can you imagine being on the beltway and you look in your rearview mirror and you just see these big pair of sunglasses following you?
Yeah, still works.
Still works.
Do you remember the first time you met one of your comedy heroes? Something, just a memory about meeting somebody who you really looked up to in the comedy world.
Eddie Murphy. Yeah. It was, we were all in LA, and it was Chris Rock's birthday, and his wife planned a dinner. So at this restaurant. So we all get to the restaurant. It was a pretty intimate, you know, dinner. So we're all at the table, this long table. And then Eddie walks in, and everyone's like, that's Eddie Murphy. So Eddie comes in, sits down, and I say hello, and he goes, I'm trying to say hi, Mr. Eddie, and he goes, I know you. He said, you're very funny. I'm like, oh.
That must have felt good.
It's like, wow, yeah, that felt good. I couldn't even get the grin off my face for the rest of the night. I was so, yeah.
You've talked about your audition for Curb Your Enthusiasm, which you did not realize was an audition. What about the first scene that you filmed with Larry David for the show? What do you remember about that process? Because it's such a unique show and the way they make it, and, you know, without a script and all that. What was it like filming that first scene?
Well, the first scene was me actually out walking, and he drives by.
Yes.
And then it's just the look I give him.
So you didn't have to do much in that one.
Yeah, I didn't have to do anything. But the first real scene was when I get to the house, and he tries to like sees me coming, and he tries to run up the stairs, and I'm like, and I lay into him about, you know, what was that crap that you said, you know, about, you know, that tush anywhere, what is wrong with you? And, you know, we just go back, and he could not stop laughing. We had to shoot it several times because he just couldn't keep it together.
That's a great scene.
Wanda? Oh, you know who I am. Okay. So I had to turn around and show you my big ass.
You completely misinterpreted
what?
That. I didn't say you had a big ass.
You yelled out, hey, big ass,
no,
Wanda.
I didn't say big ass. Oh. Just saying hello. I was just trying.
Is that how you say hello?
Well.
Is that a hey, big ass? Or hey, ass here. Hey, I know your ass. What is that? That's not how you say hello, is it?
Perhaps not.
So something about my ass has made you download it and you store it in your memory.
No, that's not so.
Do you remember the first time that you felt famous, that you were recognized, or you felt like, oh, I'm actually a famous person?
Oh, this is a good one. I was at the Beverly Center in LA, the mall out there, right? And I was with my good friend, Allison Faust, who's she's a writer, showrunner, but I think I don't know what we were working on together at the time. But yeah, so we were, you know, in LA and at the mall, and Allison is, she's from Compton. She's, you know, she's born and raised there. So we, these girls were kind of like looking at us, you know, these girls was looking at us, and, you know, we go up the escalator, and they were coming down, and then they turned around and came up the escalator. So Allison kept checking it out, right? We were going to a store, and these girls came to the store, and Allison was like, I'm going to have to bust somebody in their mouth in a minute. I'm like, what? She's like, no, nah, these girls, they're, they found us. I don't know what's going on. Let me see, you know, just, you know, we might have to fight. And I was like, I don't fight. I was like, I'm just a distraction. I'm gonna tell you right now. I was like, that's high school stuff. I don't know. So the girls start coming a little closer, And so Allison was like, y'all got a problem? What's up? And the girl's like, we just want to say hi to Miss Sight, to Wanda. And then Allison's like, bitch, I forget you famous. Damn. You know, it was just.
Yeah. Well, at least you didn't have to fight.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, Allison, people kind of know me. Yeah. But it was pretty funny.
Finally, is there a story or memory from your career that really makes you laugh now, but was really not funny when it happened?
I can't think of anything. Something that wasn't funny when it happened. Oh, well, it wasn't my career. Well, I was involved, but...
That still works.
Yeah, Keith Robinson. Mm-hmm. I should let him tell it. But when Keith Robinson had his second stroke, well, actually, the first stroke was crazy. He calls me and he's on his way to the hospital and he's like, hey, and you can hear it slurred. And he's like, I think I'm having a stroke. And I'm like, well, are you in the ambulance? What's going on? He goes, nah, I'm driving. I'm like, what the hell are you doing, yeah. Dude? What?
Pull over.
Like, what? Yeah, exactly. So it was, yeah. We laugh about that now, but it was
not funny. Yeah.
It was not funny at all.
Yeah. How's he doing now? I hear he has a special coming out.
Yeah, he's filming on December 19th in New York. I will be there cheering him on. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll get him on this podcast and talk to him about that. And I'll ask him about the story as well.
Yeah.
Well, Wanda, this was such a pleasure talking with you today.
Likewise. Thank you.
And I've been a fan of yours for so long. And as I said, I think the special is fantastic. And I'll be rooting for you at the Grammys.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. This has been great. I really loved our chat. Thank you.
Wow. That was really wonderful. So thank you again to Wanda Sykes for taking the time. Her latest special, I'm an Entertainer, is streaming now on Netflix and is nominated for a Grammy, Golden Globe, and Emmy, all of which will be handed out in the coming weeks. Wanda is also about to head out on a huge stand-up tour starting in February. You can get dates and tickets at wandasykes.com. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple and Spotify. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Threads at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram and Threads, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes and see who is coming up next week on the show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.